Hello and welcome to Idaho Senator Larry Craig's Pod Chat. Today is April 11th, 2007. I'm Dan Whiting. I'm here in Washington, D.C. with Idaho Senator Larry Craig. Subscribers to Senator Craig's biweekly newsletter, E-News, and visitors to his website were invited to ask questions, and they submitted those through the website. And if you'd like to ask a question for a future Pod Chat, we invite you to go to the website at craig.senate.gov/podchat. With that, Larry, this has been a busy 3 months for the 110th Congress, and you're working quite a bit in here in D.C., but you spend pretty much every weekend back home in Idaho. And in February, and this last Easter break, you spent a couple weeks there traveling around doing town meetings. Why don't you talk for a minute about your budget town meetings that were back there, what you discussed with Idahoans, and what you hope to accomplish?
Well, Dan, thank you for mentioning that. Yes, I spend almost every weekend home in Idaho or traveling around the state, but during the recess periods, both in February and just during this last Easter break period, I held town meetings. The budget town meetings were a specific approach that those who attended could participate in. They received a handout, and then we walked through the budget process and how it works and how it doesn't work, what the overall impact of a budget is, where the money comes from, where it's spent, all of those types of things that I think give everyone a better understanding of what we're doing. We oftentimes talk about deficit spending or spending beyond our means. At the same time, what is the impact? What are the programs involved? How big is the budget in relation to the gross domestic product of the country? Is the budget actually bigger today as it relates to the overall economy or smaller? So we had charts and graphs. The other thing that I approached with all who attended was the reality of some of the social programs that we have, especially Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and what is happening to them, especially when the baby boomer class of people in our country, those born immediately following World War II, some 44 million of them retire over the next 8 or 9 years. And they all become eligible and start receiving Social Security and are eligible for these health care programs. What does it mean to our country? How do we have to adjust those programs to fit these needs in relation to the budget? So it was very productive. They were well attended, a lot of questions asked, and I think folks went home better understanding how the budget process works.
Great. Well, certainly having listened to those, we understand that you kind of have a three-pronged approach to balancing our budgets and getting our fiscal responsibility back, and one of those is that balanced budget amendment, which you've promoted since you first came to Congress, and during the Republican control of Congress, it came within one vote of being sent to the states for ratification. And another part of that, though, is reforming the, which you talked about, reforming these entitlement programs. But thirdly, I want to talk about a little bit is the flat tax and tax reform. Can you touch on that real quick?
People are just paying their taxes or have just paid their taxes. And it's a constant reminder of the bureaucracy of the IRS, but more importantly, the hundreds upon hundreds of pages of regulations to comply with the tax code. How do you pay? How much do you pay? What do you deduct? What are you eligible? What are you ineligible for? What rates do you fall under? Should you use categories? Should you itemize? On and on and on. We've created a phenomenally complicated tax system. And as a result of that, most people simply look at the category they fall in, pay the tax as it relates to that category, and move on. And sometimes they overpay. Rarely do you underpay. At the same time, those who are very, very wealthy, making $500,000 a year or more, and there are an amazing number of them out there in this rich country of ours today, usually can hire the best kind of tax accountants and attorneys and find ways to avoid, in many respects, the kind of tax that under a fairly standardized system they would be eligible to pay. I've always supported a flat tax, which simply said you apply a rate against your income, and that's what you pay. If you're making $5 million a year, you pay 15% of it. If you're making $10,000 a year, you pay 15%. That everybody who makes a little money or a lot of money ought to participate. I'm amazed today that if you are a family of four making $25,000, you really don't pay federal taxes. You may have taxes taken out at the state level, and obviously you have Social Security tax taken out. You have withholding taken out, but you largely get it all back. I believe that if you're going to be a U.S. citizen, you ought to pay a little bit. And if you're making a lot, you ought to pay a lot more. And that's what the flat tax does. It simplifies it. It takes the complications out. The billions of dollars that taxpayers spend every year complying with tax, the tax code would simply go away as a cost of doing business.
Yeah. And speaking of budgets and speaking of taxes, the Democrats passed their budget right before the Easter break, and you and pretty much all the other Republicans voted against it. Why?
Well, it was pretty obvious. It became a big spending and a big taxing budget, almost $1 trillion worth of new taxes. You know, over the last 5 years, the Democrats have accused Republicans of being less than fiscally responsible. So I figured the Democrats would try to hide inside that shield that they created, at least for an election or two. But oh no, the moment they got their hands on the budget and their hands on the ability to raise taxes, they started spending and they started taxing again. And that's exactly what that budget was about. Every committee I go to today, there isn't a Democrat senator who doesn't come, who doesn't think there's a lot more money out there that needs to be spent on a lot more government programs. They fell right back into their old habits almost before the ink got dry.
Yeah, so when you say fiscally responsible, it's about reducing government. And when some Democrats say fiscally responsible, it's about increasing government and increasing the taxes to pay for that.
Well, if you're going to be fiscally responsible and you argue around a balanced budget, but you want to spend a lot more money, then you got to go out to get it.
Yeah.
And that means you got to raise taxes, and that's exactly what they proposed. $1 trillion worth of new taxes over the five-year period. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to some questions from Idahoans. First, and it's probably the biggest issue in America right now, and probably even in the world, arguably, is the war in Iraq. It's divisive here and in other countries, and that's reflected by the questions that have been asked to you by Idahoans. One comes from the mother of a Marine who recently returned from Iraq. The Marine did, not the mother. She wants our troops home from Iraq immediately. The other comes from Robert Meridian, who wants us to fully support the president's efforts in Iraq. And finally, we have Kathy from Chalice. She called our pod chat line to offer a specific suggestion to you and to our leaders. And so we're going to listen to that and then have you answer.
All right. Great.
My thought was, in Iraq, that our troops should be securing the borders and let the Iraqis take care of things inside, and with some stringent guidelines, I suppose, like putting Maliki on the spot, which I think is a good idea. But anyway, I thought that might be a good idea to keep anything from coming in or leaving that shouldn't, and to secure the country, that somehow that might help it.
Great. Well, Larry?
Well, not only hearing from Kathy, but hearing these two different opposing points of view, obviously the mother of the Marine and the gentleman from Meridian, really take in the spectrum of thought that's going on here in Washington today. Now, first of all, Kathy talks about securing the borders. I don't think there's any doubt that that would be a major step in the right direction if, in fact, you could secure the borders, because it is evident that a great deal of cross-border movement is happening with terrorists and al-Qaeda and troops from Syria, possibly Shia from Iran. All of that's happening there that has evolved this into a near civil war with these warring factions within the Islamic religion in the broad sense that we see today, and the fighting goes on. I guess if you're a mother and you've got a loved one in harm's way, then you fight the age-old frustration of what do you do? Obviously, that mother is every bit as dedicated to human freedom and the freedom of this country. At the same time, it's her loved one that's in harm's way that's over there and probably comes home with stories and concerns that frustrate her. At the same time, the opinion of the man from who called us from Meridian, there is a responsibility and an obligation we have in a war on terror that is real. None of us can deny the fact that their radical form of Islamic fundamentalism, whether it is perpetuated by the forms that are out there today, has intent upon changing the character of the world that is dominated in many ways by powerful nations that are Christian in their basic background. Now, that sounds almost like a religious war. Well, it certainly is a form of religion that has been radicalized into a political movement that has morphed itself into radical terrorist activities around the world. They're out there, they're alive, they're real, they continue to bring about their evil upon the world, and they look at all forms of people as their victims unless you totally agree with them and march in lockstep. We don't quite know how to handle that yet, and yet it's out there and we're faced with it, and we've lost nearly 3,000 Americans as a result of it. We oftentimes quickly fast forward from 9/11 4 years ago to today and say, oh, it's a different world today than it was then. No, it's not a different world. We've come a long way toward creating a more secure America, and we're working hard to secure our borders and identify the people within and who come across our borders. At the same time, it is obvious to me, based on the information I have, that we live in a very dangerous world, and our involvement in Iraq is a part of that whole issue.
Great. On to a domestic issue. Doug from Idaho Falls is frustrated with Medicare Part D, which is the prescription drug program, of course. He'd like to see the rules changed so that insurance companies cannot change drug coverage options during the one-year periods when people are locked into their certain plan.
No. Well, I'm not sure I disagree with Doug at all. Clearly, a contract is a contract, and if the number of drugs that are covered under that is there for a year, I think the recipient ought to have the faith that that's exactly what's going to happen. At the same time, I think you also need to reflect that drugs change, and does a contract that specifies a specific drug, if there's a better one that ought to be included in it for the sake of the recipient, should we not provide that flexibility? So as we review Part D Medicare, first of all, it has become a highly successful program. The 90% of the recipients, or nearly that, now say it has been of tremendous benefit to them. And we're going to continue to refine it. I think what Doug mentions is a part of that refinement. But a contract is a contract, and if that's what has been agreed to, it ought to be abided to during the year in the terms of the contract.
Great. And speaking of health care, Gene from Twin Falls writes to suggest that all government employees and all members of Congress receive their health care through the VA system. Now, you're the ranking Republican on the VA committee, so I think you probably have a thought or two on that one.
Well, first and foremost, that wouldn't be a bad idea. VA health care is rated as the number one health care delivery system in the nation today. Everybody thinks of Building 18 out at Walter Reed, which was Army, and it was a dormitory, it wasn't a hospital, as an example of health care. It is simply not the case. We have the highest rating of patient satisfaction for health care services delivered through the VA than through any private sector delivery system in the country. Again, it would have to be flexibility. At the same time, those who serve in Congress are not veterans. They pay for a health care insurance through their paychecks. They ought to have the flexibility to go where they want to. In fact, I propose that veterans ought to have the same flexibility. While VA ought to be their basic form of health care, if VA is not providing for them a certain type of treatment or a certain type of specialty that they think is necessary, and they are eligible service-connected veterans, who by that I mean are eligible for VA care, then I propose they ought to be allowed to go where that particular service is available in the private sector, and the Veterans Administration ought to pay for it. So there certainly needs to be flexibility all around. But I'm one who stands very proud of the VA system today. It has high ratings from outside independent sources, and the highest approval rating of consumer use of any healthcare delivery system in the country.
Excellent. We have just a couple more minutes left, and we're going to go to David from Lenore, who asks, are you supporting the repealing of the Real ID Act? So why don't you discuss, first of all, what it is for those that don't know, and then where you stand.
Well, what we're trying to do is create an ID system in this country to be able to control our borders and make sure that you can't counterfeit an ID. And Real ID passed through so very quickly. It was originally the right thing to do, meaning that the Congress said, government sit down with states and see how you can work out using the driver's license as a system that has certain protections in it so it can't be counterfeited or misused, or those who gain a driver's license are not illegals and have a screening background. Then along comes the Congress halfway through this negotiation, changes the terms and mandates it. I don't like that mandate at all. I don't think states ought to be forced into that obligation. And I have a feeling that the gentleman from Lenore is worried about a national ID. So am I. At the same time, how do we create a non-counterfeitable ID system so that we know who the bad guys are and who the American citizens are? And that's going to be, as we fight for homeland security and homeland stability, an ongoing question. But I would support repeal of the current requirements under the Real ID that are being placed on states. I don't think they ought to have that responsibility. I think it takes the sovereignty away from the state, and I strongly oppose that.
Well, great. Thanks for your time. That's all the time we have for this pod chat. If there are further listeners, if there's a question you'd like answered, please visit Senator Craig's website at craig.senate.gov. From there, you can submit a question for a future pod chat, or you can email Senator Craig a letter for a response on your specific concerns. Thank you for listening.